question.
If I just happen to see the
I didn't see the program on Stonehenge, but I read the clipping that announced in the Santa Ana newspaper that they were going to have a program on Stonehenge for about 2.5 hours. And they were going to talk about its purpose and its origin and all the things that relate to it. But I wasn't home here. I was away, and so I didn't see it. And they were going to try to figure out the answers, they said, to when it was built and who built it and so forth. But while not seeing the program, we know the answers as far as Stonehenge is concerned. Stonehenge was built by our Aryan ancestors, and it was built prior to the advent of Israel into the Isles. It was built by Aryans that had preceded them, and they had gone to this place at Avebury to build this because it was pretty well located from the site from where they wanted to be. We also had it Dolring over on the Persian Gulf, another Stonehenge like this. And up back of Burma in the Himalayas are Aryan forebears that went into India and gave them the highest order of civilization they ever had, sent their savants up into Thailand of Burma, and they set in the Himalayas another Stonehenge. Now these three sighting planes, like the pyramid, were set to measure not only the precession of equinoxes, but with it they could measure accurately the farthest areas of progression in the changing the positions of the moon and its changes over the cycles of years, which every 6 to 9 years there's alternation cycle. And they were so set, those stones were so perfectly set, that from the various positions they could get the exact measures of movement of in relationship to the planets in the solar system and their alignment. And they were watching and using this not only for a complete knowledge of the patterns and the dates for the equinox, but so they could, they were waiting for these various configurations in the heavens that they could start watching, one of which was the most important one, was the sign of the embodiment of God and the coming of Messiah. So this is why, and our race has had this from the days of Enoch, and even earlier they knew about some of these things, because remember that our Aryan forebears came down up out of that the high steps of the upper Tashan Mountains, the upper Tetum Basin. They came to the Persian Gulf, and then they migrated Persian Gulf, some of them down to the areas around Ur of the Chaldeans and the areas where Nimrod later set up his kingdom. They went over into India, and of course they brought the highest culture that India, which was already under pagan religions and fallen gods and Lucifer's control. But in fact, the history of India shows that during the Aryan invasion, they had their highest culture and their highest civilization. Of course, we set a caste system right up because they were inferior to us, and we would not permit our people to be destroyed by inferior society. And some of them were really untouchable. But the fact is that in setting up this caste system, we gave them the advantage of our knowledge and wisdom, but not the breaking down of our blood. But eventually, of course, there was some intermixing, which was the result, of course, of the Mughal invasions too, which overthrew, eventually outnumbered as we were so heavily. We were unable to hold the line completely. The Vedic writings and the areas where great spiritual truths are incorporated into what later is all messed up again in pagan Hinduism was brought in by our race during the time we were there. If you're a student of phrenology today, or if you study races by head shape and anatomy, you'll find that they were so many Aryans that controlled India. And some of this blood fused through India, and there's still pockets of Aryans there today, that they classify the Hindus as a Caucasian type, though not altogether for India. So when you see these Hindus, but they have the head shape of the Caucasian, and they classify them as Caucasian type, and the Encyclopedia Britannica, up until this present edition, used to mark them as the Caucasian type, though there are many non-Caucasians and non-whites there. They said they have this phrenology, and of course it comes from the heavy Aryan stock that came over and resided there. See, now, this goes back, these are the sons of the descendants of Seth in the household, up to about the same time that we come to Enoch and Job migrating, or their peoples migrating down out of the steppes too. Adam left Eden about 5400 B.C. About 5000 B.C., we have Enoch and Job on the panorama of history, and Enoch was writing the things that he had from his heavenly experience and his trips out into the heavens about 5000 B.C. So therefore, it was right close to this, and thereafter that he and Job led that group of 144,000 savants down into Egypt to build on, in which the eye of Yahweh and the great disc protected them from the dark priest of Set and Thoth that wanted to destroy these white men that were coming in. And after that, they didn't have much problem from there on. And Job and Enoch went down about that period of time. The writings of Enoch date back to around 5,000 to 4,800 B.C. in along that period of time. Now, remember that Stonehenge, the sighting factors of Stonehenge, Doe Ring, and the High Himalaya Ring of stones, all set together, all of them the product of white men coming in, show that this lore of measuring the sky, understanding the processions of equinoxes, and knowing the world was round, was specifically a white man's knowledge. And this is true, of course, in the Temple of Zendera, where we set up the signs of the equinox and all the patterns with it. And there again, the cycle shows that the movement of the planet and their revolutions, and the earth and its revolution. And so today, sitting in this temple, which white men built in Egypt, it's thoroughly known that they knew the world was round, they knew we made this orbit, and they knew the positions. And so here we have 612 stars from first to seventh magnitude that we could see with the eye, which we set in this visible temple. So this again is all of these 612 stars were, of course, could be sighted in the course of the night as we move in our positions. But the stars are always there. In other words, the stars never move. We shift north and south in our axis according to in our ecliptic as we from winter to summer. And in the summer we can see more stars or stars that we can't see in the wintertime sometimes because of the shift. But the fact is the stars, except for the slight motion, are always in the same place, in latitude and longitude. And it's only the planets that move. So we know that these Aryans that came into India came in and established this about the same time as the peoples that provided the parents for Enoch and Job had been making their migrations, and their migrations had been down to the areas around old Mesopotamia and over into what we know now as Palestine. For Job and Enoch had lived at a location near what is now known as Jerusalem, and they were the first ones to name the city in that land Jerusalem, or Ur-Usalem, Ur rather than Jer, because Ur meant city and Salem meant city of peace. So therefore, in the days of Enoch and Job, it was called Ur-Usalem, a city of peace, and the city of the God of peace. And whereas it was quite a city, basically they had agriculture, and they also had their flocks. And their herds and flocks, they grazed all around on the outside, but the people were supported by these herds and by their agriculture. And it was from this city that Enoch and Job had gathered their savants to go down to Egypt. So approximately at the same time, and shall we say maybe 100 years between the period of 5100 B.C. to 5000 B.C., not over 50 years thereafter, is when Aryans moved into India and had built that observing center up there. Now, it wasn't until it's a possibility that we might have 200 years differentiation here in that Enoch had his experience because he was taken out into space by the angels. And he traveled in this ship, and he was shown all these mysteries, and he was told what he was to write, and of course he and Enoch, Job, had his experiences too, and went down there to not only build this city, but to build this pyramid eventually, and to put these things within it. Now, therefore, knowing that this had to be the prelude before his advent into Egypt, it's a possible thing that the actual knowledge concerning how to set up this sky measure may not have taken place till maybe after the 100 years or so, or before he migrated to Egypt, because one of the first things we know must have been done is that Enoch communicated what he had been taught, and runners carried this to all the outposts of our race. They had to carry it back to the Sethite sons to get the full story of what they were waiting for, and vice versa. They had to, everywhere where they were white men, Persia, over in the Aryan migrations in India, and down into Egypt, was the same knowledge concerning where to look for and what the signs were, and over also in Britain. Now, we know that the Anglo-Saxon, Scandinavian, Nordic, Basque, Lombard migrations into Europe didn't take place until Shalmaneser, the Assyrian, had given his freedom to the captive tribes of Israel. We know that the captivity of Israel, we know when it took place, and we know that as far as the last of the tribes to fall was in 586 B.C. when to 584, and this is when Babylon took over Jerusalem and took Judah and Benjamin captive. We know, therefore, that there was no migrations of the Israel segment of the Adamic race into Europe, except for the Scythians, which migrated about 80 years before the rest of them, which formed the Greek settlements of Scythia, which is Greece. And that they came through first, and Greece was set up first, and then the rest of the white race that made Western Europe came through the Caucasus, through the Caucasian Mountains, and of course when they arrived out in Britain, such as the Anglo-Saxons, the House of Joseph, they already found white men some there who were picked, and these of course were Aryans, that a few of them, though they were very primitive, but they in the areas of hadn't built great cities or anything, but they had built this tremendous astronomical observatory. And they did have in they had cave they had in they had built stone dwellings, some of which were covered with heavy mounds of dirt, and they had buildings which they had made of woods, the wood shelters, wattled wood shelters of what. So there was dwellers on Ireland when the Anglo-Saxons arrived, and they found them there. And of course the tribe of Dan, which settled in Denmark, and part of Dan went over into Ireland, and Ireland is made up partly of Dan, partly out of these Picts, see. So, but the thing that was significant about it is that among the Danites that settled partly in Ireland was some of the descendants of the throne of David, but they were descendants among the rebels that had gone out with the 10 tribes. And so Hergerman of Ireland, who was the king over Ireland at the time of the fall of Judah and Benjamin, in the land of Palestine, when Babylon took them, he was at 586 B.C. Hergerman was the king in Ireland, a Davidic line ruling over the Anglo-Saxon peoples, which were now in Europe and settled down, to the extent that here we have Hergerman, king of Ireland, a descendant of the Israel seed that is settled in Ireland, but the predominant population was Anglo and Saxon. Or of the house of Joseph, and Picts and Danites had the throne in Ireland ruling over them of David. And that's why Jeremiah took Tetaphi, the daughter of Zedekiah, which is what we referred to here in the book of Ezekiel, where he took the tender twig and planted it by the great waters in the land of the plantations. And then the throne moved from Ireland to Scotland to Wales, and by the time it's moved from Scotland to Wales, it's in the full heart of Anglo-Saxonism, and the whole Isles are well knit together. Now, knowing therefore this time, we know that Stonehenge was built back at the same time that Doering and the others were built. So we would say that there was a period of some 4,500 years of Stonehenge existence before any of our Anglo-Saxon brethren arrived here. But when our Anglo-Saxon brethren arrived, they had in their minds, our forebears, they had a knowledge of the wisdom and the mysteries which came out of the basic original Masonic lore, or the mysteries of the temple teaching that go all the way back to the days of Enoch and Job. And so in these mysteries of Enoch and Job were kept not only measures of the sky, because this was never codified in writing until Enoch put it in writing, with the exception that in the books of the Bee, if you can find a complete one, which follows the book of Seth, that God had told Seth of things that would happen concerning also his own messiahship, and the signs would be in the heavens, and they would be made known unto him. So the book of the Bee does have some configurations in, but the book of the Bee, like the book of the Zohar and like Dasher, is computed to have been added to and to have lasted over a period of quite a bit of time, because things that God showed them or taught them that were divine revelation went into the book of the Bee. So like the Zohar, the Bee contained the fact that there would be certain signs in the heavens to mark the coming of Messiah, and that two of the great wanderers would come together, and that when they came together, that the third time, that the Messiah would be born. So that would climax the pregnancy of Mary, and there would be ultimately a conjunction in the sky at the time of the birth of Christ. So remember that this is way back. This is back in the days of Seth, who is the first accepted son of Adam. And of course, the gestations that took place there over a period of a few years might have only marked 10 or 12 years of time before Seth was born, back after Adam was driven out of Eden. So this gives us a pretty close dating to the fact that Stonehenge is around 5,000 B.C. And when our forebears went in, one of the great wisdom schools of their learning involved what later was called Druidry. Now remember that we went in with our tribal heritage and background, that we had our high priests, and the high priests that were with the Anglo-Saxon people were similar to the high priests of Israel, that since the seed of the throne had been transplanted in the Isles, in this was very significant because remember that when by the time that that during the ministry of Christ, that the Isles of Britain was well known to be the household of Israel, for this is where Joseph of Arimathea owned his hides of land. Here's where the first Christian church was built. Here's where Jesus, while visiting after going over there on a ship of Joseph of Arimathea, built the Wattle Church of Glastonbury. Here is where later after Christ's ascension, that Mary was taken by Joseph and some of the apostles over to Britain to live out her years in security where she wouldn't be persecuted by the Palestinian Jews. And so this is on land that would belong to Joseph. And where she stayed, there's a well, and this well is called the well is called Mary's Well, and it's a freshwater well that has always had good, cold, clear water. And this is at Glastonbury. And so the tomb of Mary is at Glastonbury today, where Mary is supposed to be buried. And there's no doubt that she wasn't bodily assumed into heaven, that she was buried there. And of course, in Ireland is the tomb of Jeremiah, who they called in Irish Olam Fala, who brought the princess. And this is a part of their tradition, and they know where he's buried and what tor and mound it's in, and so forth. And here is the tor that the ancient lore tells us they had buried the Ark of the Covenant. And the Ark of the Covenant had been taken from there, and when Westminster Abbey was built at London, and this was land that belonged also to Joseph of Arimathea, of course, that they had built this abbey on, and this ancient abbotry, and Westminster Abbey is the house of God westward, Jerusalem was the house of God eastward, and here in the floor, just before the coronation chair, is a slab of stone, and all these mosaics are fitted in, and this one is a hollow slab, and this slab is the exact size of the Ark of the Covenant. And records show that ancient Druid and Masonic leaders took the Ark out of its dwelling place, the cave, took the handles off, and put it down under the floor in Westminster Abbey, and that this is where the Ark of the Covenant was placed. And this is the exact same size. There has been some who said, well, the Ark of the Covenant was received up into the heavens until the time of the return of Christ. But there is quite a bit of evidence to the effect that the Ark was taken by Jeremiah, along with the showers of salt and all these sacred things, which are today in the British Tower of London and which are used at coronation time. All these go back, just like on the wall of Buckingham Palace, is the entire genealogy of the Queen of England all the way back down to David. Queen Elizabeth goes all the way back to David in the line. Now, and it goes right down and takes this genealogy right straight back to Ireland, and then from TTP, brought over by Jeremiah, right back again to Zedekiah. And, of course, the scriptures tell us that when, here in Ezekiel, that when the king of Babylon came and carried Zedekiah and his sons captive to Babylon, that they were killed. But God did not let this end it, that he cropped a tender twig off of the top of the high branch. And he had planted this by the great waters, and it grew to be a great branch that spread over the walls in the mountain of one of the highest nations of God's kingdom. So he dried up the green tree and caused the dry side of the kingdom now to flourish, throne transplanted. Now, the fact is that those men, when they arrived in ancient Druidry, they knew what that Stonehenge was for, and they knew it was to measure the precession of the equinoxes. They had this lore still alive from the days of the founding of Masonic wisdom. This was known in the days of Solomon, and it had been known by David. David shows a lot in his writings of the secret lore and of the things which he showed, and the Spirit moved upon him, and he writes this right in the Psalms. In fact, a person that was a real light carrier and had not just gone through masonry with a bang just to get the degrees so that they could join the Shriners or something, if they hadn't been piked and messed up by the invasion, which tried to change the doctrines of masonry, just like today it has invaded the church, they would discover, if they read with their eyes open the Psalms, they would just get thrill after thrill of Masonic wisdom that is hidden away in the Psalms, see? Because these secrets keep bouncing out here and there. Now, if one had all 163 books, plus or minus the few that were spurious, you discover that the 163 scrolls that contains so much of the wisdom of the things of God. And it is my personal belief that if we had 163 of these scrolls here intact today, and that we could pursue them, that we would finally throw out 10 of them. I am of the opinion that there was exactly as many inspired scrolls as there was a displacement factor. And just as Jesus had them count the fish in the net, it was 153, I think there was 153 inspired scrolls or sacred writings. And I think 10 of them were phony, like the Songs of Solomon, the Book of Esther, and some of the others. But I think there's 153 inspired scrolls, just as one quarter of the 612 luminaries was 153, and this was the exact gestation displacement factor that was involved by the fall of our race. Because when we violated divine law and we had lost the aura of light and glory, and the law of sin and death took over in our physical bodies, the gestation period from 360 days to 9 months was the result. And women now brought forth child with pain and suffering, and we were all of us cut out, not 3 months of the period of the vibrations of all of the celestial synthesis of the universe. So this left us incomplete and under the law of sin and death. Now, the reason why the zodiac measure was so important is in the Gospel Message of the Stars, the prophecy was given that when God had consummated his purposes and had become embodied in earth and had fulfilled his work in as the messianic completer to restore his people, that when this transpired, he would have finished the law of judgment and restored us back to the law of life and would have been our completer, and therefore would have set aside all the displacement which evil had caused. And he cited that this might not be understood until the day when he finished his measure and the second alignment patterns came in and the king had joined his people and finishes his kingdom in the earth. So this being known, therefore, remember that whereas in Christ's atonement, he paid the price, he restored us by spirit and by faith, no condemnation rested upon us. And according to our faith to perceive it, and the function which was the climax of these latter days, but was as available as we had the capacity to perceive, the spirit of Christ, the law of atonement, now restored to us, which he, the capstone and the completer, could alone do, had given back to us what we had lost by the original fall of our race. So therefore, whereas we had the displacement factor of 153, or everybody, according to the time of their birth, was just incomplete 3 months, this was the law of sin and death. This was the quadrant of design. This was the thing, the reason why everybody would have certain tendencies much alike, according to when they were born, would be affected by the same vibratory impact of the universe, and so forth. And in this pattern, there would be all of the guilt complex measures adjusted by this, that would even give a person a life expectancy, a time when they anticipated they would die. All top psychiatrists realize today that people build up and it develops as they subconsciously probe for the least common denominator between the background of their inheritance and their forefathers, and they get an idea that they expect to live about so long. Some think they're going out in 70, and some 80, and some 90, and some think they're maybe going to make 95, and then there's some of us don't think we're going to go at all. But the fact remains that because of that, the only reason why we think this is that we have accepted the completion and the law of the spirit of life in Christ Jesus, which is referred to in this mystery of the Paul and Romans, has made us free from this law of sin and death. This doesn't mean that you don't make mistakes, but that you have already accepted a law of life and a finished atonement. Whereas other people have accepted this in mind, but they still are anticipating or setting up the clockwork that starts organic failure and causes AIDS. This is why as we reach the end of this age, as knowledge was to increase and spiritual revelation was to be restored, the spiritual energy and the kinetic energy it would release and the energy that would move out of the celestial consciousness was going to start rebuilding the human body of our race. And before this climax of this age, which is now coming fast to a close, God says, I will do a short work of righteousness, and after this will I come. And he said, when I present this people unto myself, my household, my faith, there's not going to be a wrinkle, a spot, or a blemish. So in other words, this is restored life. This is vitality. This is completion. This means then that what we lost by a 9 month gestation because of the fall, he as the completer has completed, and thus therefore the spiritual vitality of the flow of spiritual forces from the father to the children, and this as it's admitted by the soul consciousness as we reach out to receive this, and we synthesize ourselves into the plans of God that reach out into eternity, and we think in terms of race and destiny and origin and purpose, we are already rebuilding the areas of vitality that all the other frictions and anticipations and fears would destroy. So therefore, this is why, again, we say that they were vitally concerned in this, because this secret lore is deep in Druidry. It's deep in the inner core of the real light carriers, which was the real heart of Maestri. Now, it's true that they use the term later in the word magician is not a good word. But the word magician comes from the wisdom of the Magi. And the Magi were our Sethite forefathers. And remember that Job was a Magi. Remember that Enoch was Magi. They descended from the Sethites. They were true Israel because they were God's princes ruling in earth, and before the name was placed on Jacob to later be known as a national name. But remember that in this issue, that these men were men of wisdom, patriarchal leaders, and they were virtual astronomers and scientists, divinely taught at a high heavenly level. The wisdom and the lore in the secrets of Enoch and the astronomical observation that they were inspired to make, and their knowledge of the applications of various laws of physics that caused them to be able to elevate massive stones that we can't lift today without a locomotive derrick, and still we can't fit them like they did, proved that this divine wisdom that was given to Enoch and to Job and given to our race even at that time was of intense scientific value and of extreme brilliance and high intellectual, spiritual level intellectuality because of its impact. We haven't been able today to find any areas of contemporary science that can be as accurate and can do as much as we were able to do even at that time. Though we have today with our skyscrapers and our vast bridges and our technology and our spacecraft and so forth, we have proved that there is nothing that we set our minds to do that the areas of our inspiration cannot accomplish. But the fact is we have not as yet fathomed some of the things which they did without the machinery we're using today to do it. So that it was known that these men, therefore, that could use such intense spiritual wisdom for such dynamic concentration were called magicians, because they could use spiritual wisdom and direct application of power without machinery to get the job done. And such men that carried this wisdom were magi. Now, some of them didn't always have the knowledge in all the areas of physics, maybe, but many of them were astronomers. This is why when these three Aryan princes, with a fourth one late, arrived to find the birth of Christ and said, we saw his star, we came to worship him. What did they call them? Magi. Why did they call them Magi? Because they came from these wise, divinely taught race, and they were savants. Their life was devoted to keeping alive and passing on this knowledge. In the early wisdom, and it's still known by certain areas of this wisdom school, they knew what this thing was for. Now, I there are some things that I can't discuss tonight about Britain and London and Druidry, but I can tell you this, that while these men spent 2.5 hours or three on a symposium, that there are some great intellectuals in Britain who could take them into a huge oak tree through a door in a very fine oak row to a vast underground grotto where there's one of the finest temples of Druidry in the world today and show them the whole thing, see? In fact, we have a friend who was in high up in education in San Diego County, and he attended our meetings, and he discovered the great mystery of the two obelisks.